Case number 4, In re Christopher Trinidew. Mr. Keeler.
Good morning, Your Honors. The question before the court is whether a $25,000 lump sum payment to an attorney for overtrial is a domestic support obligation. Stated another way, how is a $25,000 payment to an opposing attorney not punishment? There are five reasons why the $25,000 is not a domestic support obligation. First, the overtrial did not involve maintenance, alimony, support, or custody. Second, the award was for Christopher's litigation misconduct. Third, the payment went directly to counsel. Fourth, the state court order dripped with disdain for Christopher. And fifth, the award was not based on the parties' respective abilities to pay.
Was testimony heard on the amount of the award in this case?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. The record is not.
Some of our research indicated it did, although we don't have a transcript of it. But so, what did the judge base the amount of the attorney's fees on?
To be honest, Your Honor, I'm not sure. I did not see any transcripts. As far as how the court arrived at the $25,000 figure, I'm not entirely sure. The order did not specify as to attorney rates or fees or anything like that. So sanctions in the form of attorney's fees for litigation misconduct are punishment for the wrongful actor. And it's not a domestic obligation meant to support the other party.
And this so you're saying that the proceeding before the state court judge didn't have to do at all with the custody of the children or the placement of the children or medical decisions about the children?
Yes and no. These hearings, there was essentially six different motions filed by different parties, obviously. But the overtrial finding itself, and that would be at paragraph 19 of the state court order, that specifically discusses educational decision making. And more specifically, what high school two of the minor children attended. So in that regard, the answer to your question would be no. It was specifically in regards to educational decision making.
Right, and the court talks about the considerable time that was unnecessarily spent on that issue.
Yes, Your Honor. And that, in our opinion, proves our point or confirms our point that it was over litigation on the issue of educational decision making and not alimony, not maintenance, not support, not custody. And I think that's what makes this case unique, different from a lot of the other cases out there, in that these other cases involve situations such as delinquent child support or alimony or issues relating to custody. And none of those factors are present here.
But didn't where the kids go to school have an impact on the costs of where the children went to school in terms of the distances and that kind of thing?
I believe, Your Honor, both schools are public schools, so I'm not sure if costs are. But in terms of distance, in terms of logistics, certainly those would be factors impacting both Mary Beth and Christopher. Now, the holding we're asking for the court is a narrow one. We're not asking that the court find that any time a payment must be made directly to an attorney, that can never be a domestic support obligation. What we're asking the court for is where a direct payment to an attorney in a lump sum of a sizable amount made without regard for the ability of the party to pay, where punishment is the motivation, and where litigation does not involve alimony, custody, or support, that is not a domestic support obligation. So in other words, the circumstances of this debt, the unique facts of this case, those lend itself to a finding that this is not a domestic support obligation. And I would also direct the court to Section 101, which defines what a domestic support obligation is. And it specifically says that it's a debt created in the nature of alimony, maintenance, or support. The problem with the bankruptcy court's ruling is that it expanded or altered that definition. It went beyond that and said anything involving the custody, the care, the welfare of minor children, that makes it a domestic support obligation. And we respectfully submit that that is simply not correct. It's not what the statute says. And this expansion has no authority. In fact, the bankruptcy court cited no authority for that expansion. Additionally, Your Honors, the policy considerations behind Section 523 are to ensure that genuine support obligations are not improperly discharged. Now, that concern is not implicated here for the reasons that I've stated, that this does not involve child support or custody or alimony. And more specifically, the issues of child support, custody, or alimony were not the genesis of these fees. The creditor ultimately has the burden to demonstrate an exception to discharge. And these exceptions are construed in the debtor's favor. The creditor has simply not provided the court with reasons why the authority or the argument cited in our opening brief are incorrect. In fact, we cited a series of cases, such as Nolan, Lopez, Mayer, and in these cases, they demonstrate why the district court's and the bankruptcy court's decisions are incorrect, and they reject the reasoning of the bankruptcy court.
Is the Tenth Circuit just wrong?
The Tenth Circuit? In re Jones is factually distinguishable in that it involved custody, the issue of custody. So in that regard, it's different. As far as the holding itself, we would disagree with it, but this court would not have to I would say it would not have to reject that court's reasoning. For an additional reason that subsequent to In re Jones and the Lawther decision, it to a degree scaled back Jones because it said, well, in these there's unique circumstances where if the fee award is going to impact the creditor's ability to pay, then we're still going to say that this can be discharged. So I would say that the Tenth Circuit, obviously, we disagree with that position, but again, I think it's factually distinguishable.
Now, in this domestic relations proceeding in Wisconsin, was the matter of child support before the judge?
There were issues of child support, I believe, because some of the money, basically there have been changes in the party's circumstances in terms of income and things
so
like that.
So the judge at the end of the day was going to, had to know how much each parent could afford to support the children.
Right. And child support, there was one segment of the order that did address child support, and there were some changes in terms of how much the payments were.
And then before the court even did that breakdown, it summarized the gross monthly income of both parents.
It did, Your Honor.
By year.
Yes. Yes. And there were some changes from 2011 and 2012.
So after doing all of this, figuring out how much each could contribute, etc., judges confronted with the fact that the husband elongated the proceedings by bringing up what the judge thought was at least an overtried issue. And as a result, it saddled his former spouse with $25,000 worth of expenses, paying an attorney to be there. Doesn't it seem strange that the judge wasn't making that estimation and deciding the husband ought to pay it, taking into consideration what the judge had just done with respect to asset allocation and a response and payment allocation between the parties on a matter of child support?
Well, Your Honor, specifically as to over litigation, the court does not in its order specify as to the parties' respective abilities. So that's we would say.
So the judge, in your view, I mean, just said, well, you'll pay so much, you'll pay so much. And by the way, Mrs. So-and-so, you'll also buy your husband a new car.
Essentially, that's correct.
And that's just fine.
Well, I mean, the other point is, and maybe I'm misunderstanding your question. But
well, in other words, she was going to have to pay $25,000 that he otherwise, in lieu of him, even though he was responsible for having run up those attorney's fees.
Well, I would agree with that, and that's essentially goes to our point, that this was punishment. And because it's punishment, because the motivation of the state court was punishment, that it's not...
Well, was the motivation of the state court to make sure that the party that had run up those attorney's fees paid for them and didn't disturb the court's handiwork with respect to support allocation?
That could be, but the order does not specify.
Judge, what the bankruptcy judge and the district judge read the order that way. And having read the order that way, your burden is to prove they were clearly erroneous, right?
That's correct. And I see my time has expired, but I can answer.
Judge Ripples.
Thank you. The order itself, our position is, the bankruptcy court's order interpreting the facts is inherently inconsistent in that the state court, throughout its opinion, punishes and is very disdainful of Christopher and at the same time then punishes him for these actions for over-litigation.
But if the district, what if the domestic relations judge had allocated support responsibility very carefully between the two parties, and then it said, oh, by the way, you ran up your wife's attorney's fees, but that's okay, she can pay that. You'd be in here, if you were representing her, you'd be in here arguing that's inconsistent too. It's inconsistent for him to allocate responsibility carefully for support payments and then saddle her with the debt that was her because of her husband's irresponsibility, right?
Well, Your Honor, frankly, I'm not sure what the state court, in terms of its logic, in terms of setting support amounts versus this, I'm not sure what that $25,000, how that calculated in. I will say simply that the amount, the incomes of the two parties, of Christopher and Mary Beth, was very similar. It was basically, I think, maybe $300 or $400.
But one
difference.
Was a lot more stable than the other.
True, and it was Mary Beth who had a more stable income and stable employment. But as far as this isn't an instance where one party is a breadwinner and the other is not. There was no lopsided. And if anything, Mary Beth's income and employment history was much more stable.
And see, the other thing is that the state court judge goes into great detail about the anger issues and the relationships. And so in order to decide what is a good environment for the kids, for the school, what parent he should rely on in terms of their relationship with the children and who they would stay with when they're at a particular school, all that is mixed into, it seems to me, this question on where the kids are going. And how many days in the testimony dealt with the kids and what school they were going to be at? Because it's not just, you know, my impression is it wasn't just, oh, I'm going to decide what school they're going to get. The judge has to decide that in a context. In the context of the relationship, in the context of the type of father he was, where he didn't respond except for 10% of the time to the mother when she's asking questions about the kid, to the point where he bugs this doctor that was involved that he doesn't want to deal with them anymore. I mean, you don't think any of that should go to that question?
I certainly admit the record is not very flattering of Christopher and his parenting skills. I would say that, if anything, those points go to the fact, again, responding to Judge Ripple's question, that those reflect a motivation to punish. I do believe, Judge Williams, that these things are all, it's obviously one order, and there's different factors.
Isn't that key here? It is one order. You can't look at these as each of these issues as in hermetically sealed containers. Indeed, for all we know, the judge thought that the husband was bringing up this bogus question of which school the girls went to, frankly, to get some leverage over his ex-wife with respect to alimony payments, or support payments, excuse me.
Yes, it is one order.
That's the scorched earth way that these things go down.
It's unfortunately true, but one point is that the order specifically, there's four sections to this order, as we point out in the brief, and each one is custody, support, I believe it's health insurance, and then overtrial. So overtrial is, again, it's part of one opinion, but it's a separate section, and that again, confirms our point that this was something different.
And this $25,000, this was not the ex-wife's complete attorney fee.
I would doubt that, Your Honor, given the fact that there were 16
years. So given all this litigation in 6 years, so it was just a part of it. He says, it was just a part of it. It wasn't all the fees.
Okay. That's true, Your Honor. Right. So if there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Schreiber?
This case presents an appeal of the bankruptcy court's finding of fact. The determination of whether a debt is in the nature of support, and therefore a domestic support obligation, is a finding of fact. It depends on the function that the award was intended to serve. This has been universally seen by courts as a factual finding, subject to a clear error standard on review.
Mr. Schreiber, is there a transcript available of the testimony given in the underlying case, particularly with regard to the award of attorney's fees?
I haven't seen it.
It seems to me to make some difference whether the attorney's fees, they're just $25,000, whether the judge says, off the top of her head said, or his said, $25,000 is awarded. It may go to some distance to determine whether or not it's punitive or part of the award is, considering all the facts of the case.
I believe there were the legal bills were in front of the judge, and the $25,000 reflected a portion of the total fees incurred by the wife.
So if the fees were in front of the judge, what was the total? Was that put on the record?
I think it's around $50,000. I believe there was a state court appeal of the overtrial issue, and I believe the state appellate court mentioned that. That might be where I saw it.
But the transcript, was it just that the transcript wasn't prepared? Nobody ordered the transcript of the hearing?
I don't know.
Well, okay. Unfortunately, that would have gone some distance. If the fees were submitted, it might have gone some distance making a determination what are the nature of the fees, attorney's fees.
As a result of this being a factual finding, the court may only reverse the bankruptcy court if it is left with a definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been committed. That's not the case here. The bankruptcy court's determination that the debt owed to the wife's attorney is a domestic support obligation is entirely plausible in light of the record of this case. The bankruptcy court looked to the intent of the state court, which is a factor to be used in determining whether an obligation is a domestic support obligation. And that question of whether it's a domestic support obligation is a question of bankruptcy law, not state law. Bankruptcy court determined that the obligation was clearly a result of fees incurred in litigation relating to the care, custody, and welfare of the minor children. So the award was not purely punishment.
How do we know that? That's what we're getting to. Where's the transcript that shows that?
Well, because the litigation was related to the care, custody, and welfare of the children, the fees incurred in that litigation relate to the support of the children. Mm-hmm. It was unnecessarily protracted litigation, which had a detrimental effect on the children's welfare. The children's mother being forced to take on expensive custody litigation will invariably have an adverse effect on the children, both financially and emotionally. The debtor in this case had to compensate the children and their mother by paying the attorney's fees for the unnecessarily protracted litigation. I'd like to point briefly on the discussion of the public policy behind exceptions to the discharge. It's true that exceptions to discharge are generally viewed in the debtor's favor. However, for domestic support obligations, those are viewed differently because there's a public policy favoring enforcement of familial obligations. So the appellant can't simply say that exceptions to discharge are always construed in the debtor's favor, because in this particular error, in this particular area, there's a special public policy favoring enforcement of familial obligations. I'd also like to mention the waived argument regarding the identity of the payee. It was briefly mentioned in argument today. The debtor at no point in front of the bankruptcy court made any argument with respect to the first subsection of U.S. Code 101-14A, which says that the debt is owed to or recoverable by a spouse, former spouse, or child, but now tries to bring it up in briefing on appeal and argues that an attorney is not on that list, therefore cannot be a payee. It was never argued at any point in the bankruptcy court. District court acknowledged that, considered the issue waived, and footnoted it, noting there is ample case law anyway supporting that an attorney may be a payee of a domestic support obligation. Given the standard of appeal in this case, the clear error standard, there's no reason for this court to be left with a conviction that a mistake has been committed. The bankruptcy court considered all the circumstances, determined that the debt was a domestic support obligation because it occurred in unnecessarily protracted litigation relating to the care, custody, and welfare of the minor children of the marriage. If there are no further questions.
Well, let me ask you this. There was a in the opening brief, there was a definition of what an overtrial is. That was, I had never heard that before, but it describes an overtrial as a Wisconsin family law doctrine applied when a litigant's unreasonable approach to litigation causes the other party to incur extra unnecessary fees. But it doesn't, by the very fact that it was an overtrial, indicate it wasn't, there was punishment, not part of the...
The overtrial, the doctrine of overtrial has two, can have two objectives. It can provide compensation to the overtrial victim for fees unnecessarily incurred, specifically in family law litigation. And it can also deter unnecessary use of judicial resources. In this case, the overtrial was awarded as a result of litigation related to the welfare, care, custody, and welfare of the minor children. On top of that, the domestic support obligation, whether a debt is a domestic support obligation, is a question of federal law under the bankruptcy code. It's not a question of state law. So while the nature of the overtrial doctrine can be helpful to the bankruptcy court in determining the function that that award was intended to serve, it's not determinative. It's the bankruptcy court's role to answer the federal question.
Well, all right, but I would assume that we have to look, the bankruptcy court, the federal courts, have to look to state law to determine whether this is an intended to be a punitive approach.
And the bankruptcy court did. It looked to the overtrial award and said that it's clear that in this case, that award was related to the care, custody, and welfare of the minor children.
It said it's clear?
I think the bankruptcy court said sometimes it's unclear, not so here. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I'll give you another minute, counsel. 1 minute.
As far as the identity of the payee, it's true that it was not, it essentially was waived, but it does go to the issue of the circumstances of the debt, and that's why I raised it in the briefs, and it is relevant in that regard. As far as state law is relevant. I mean, obviously federal bankruptcy law controls, but state law provides guidance on whether a debt should be considered in the nature of support. And then as far as, again, the care, custody, and control, there's simply nothing in the statute, nothing in Section 101 or 532 regarding that. And finally, Judge Kaney, as far as your question, that strikes at the heart of the creditor's case. And one person's compensation is another person's punishment. And the state court order is the epitome of punishment. And we would therefore ask that the court find that this is not a domestic support obligation for the reasons in our briefs. And I thank the court for its time.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel, and the case is taken.